Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuc. New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's first powerhouse main stage show of this summer is Keith Bunin's The Unbuilt City. The production opened last night and runs through July 12th. The show stars Beth Dixon and Carter Hudson and is directed by Tony Award nominee Sean Mathias. Writer, actor, and director, Sean Mathias directed the film Bent and numerous acclaimed plays all over the world, including in London, New York City, Cape Town, Sydney, and Los Angeles. He joins us now. Sean Mathias, welcome to the Roundtable.
Thanks for having me.
It's an absolute honor and a thrill to be able to speak with you today. So we'll begin with the matter at hand. How did you come to direct The Unbuilt City for New York Stage and Film?
Pure luck, as with most jobs, really. The author, Keith Bunin, and I share an agent in New York City. And my agent gave me the play and said, would I like to direct it in London? And I read it and loved the play, responded very strongly to it, and said, I'd love to do it, but why London? Because it's all set in Brooklyn. We should do it in New York. And last summer, we came up to New York Stage and Film and did a workshop reading of it. So we spent 4 days sitting around a table discussing it, working on it, Keith doing some rewrites. And then at the end of those 4 days, two actors read it. And it went very well, had a great response. And Keith and I have done two other readings over the past year. And now we're doing a full production for New York Stage and Film at Vassar this summer.
As it is a new play, could you tell us a little bit about the story and then elaborate on what it was about the play that you responded to that made you want to attach yourself to it?
The story is very unusual. It's about an older woman who's had a great deal of wealth, inherited wealth, lives in a townhouse in Brooklyn, and is really a philanthropist, has given away most of her wealth to New York City, and is rumoured to have one rather large and final bequest to make. And a university in Texas wants to collect it for their archive. They've got great wealth to acquire things. It would be a great feather in their cap if they could have this as part of their collection. And so they send a former student along who is a writer and a researcher and a journalist and an historian, a man now in his mid-30s, to really broker the deal as to whether they can get this unsaid piece in her collection into their archive. And it's a story, really, of the two, the older woman and the younger man, connecting and misconnecting. It's a kind of very passionate dance of the mind and the spirit. It's centered very much upon how we lead our lives in the modern urban world, how cities like New York, and therefore I connected it via London, how they've changed so radically over the last 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years, how they've become cities where the divide between rich and poor is greater than it's ever been. So it's dealing with a lot of very moral and, you know, issues of how we live in society right now. But it's all filtered through the passion and the heart of these two people. So it's a very beautiful play. You couldn't call it a love affair, but there's a kind of sense that they fall in love. They create this amazing friendship right in front of the audience's eyes because it's all done in real time over 90 minutes.
And what in that story do you get to explore that maybe you haven't before with your directing?
Well, I suppose, you know, the thing is, everybody's only got a few playing cards in their hand. And I suppose my playing cards have always been more cards of the characters and the psychology of characters. And nearly all the plays I've done have been based on that. And the plays that I've had success and great joy with have been based on that, a sort of post-Freudian way of looking at the world. And this play is very, very much about that. It's very psychological, very emotional. I suppose the content, apart from the characters, which are, I think, fastidiously drawn and uniquely drawn, they're two very unique characters. I haven't really, you know, directed actors in characters quite like this before, which is great. That's always a thrill and a challenge. But I think it's the content that really drew me to it, the idea of asking us, how do we live our lives right now? If you live in London, you live in New York, how do you live? What does that mean to you? And I think it's got reverberations beyond the city, but it is very much connected to the big city.
Living in a city would mean different things to different people, depending on their class or what neighborhood they live in or anything like that. How do you explore what living in a city means to the characters, drawing on what it means to you?
The older, richer character has lived in Brooklyn Heights all her life and owns a townhouse, which would be incredibly valuable. The younger character lives in a different part of Brooklyn and has to, fork up an awful lot of rent for a much, much smaller space. So, so the divide is drawn already by the characters. I mean, I suppose I've lived a bit of all of these lives in London and a bit in New York, and I've been lucky enough to build a terrific career in the theatre, and some years I've earned absolutely no pennies whatsoever, and other years I've had, very good earnings. And so I'm lucky. And also I came from a generation in England where we were encouraged to buy when we were young. So I got on the property ladder very, very early on. And that is a different thing in England. Everybody was really, really encouraged to buy. So a lot of people around my age, even if they don't earn huge sums annually, often they'll live in a very nice home that they've had for a number of years, or they've climbed the property ladder by being smart enough. That has sort of been taken away in England. It's very different in America, I know. They don't completely parallel. But that's been taken away to a great degree. It's very, very difficult for youngsters to get onto the property ladder in the city, because the cities have become so expensive. London, huge swathes of London, have been sort of enveloped by foreign money. Big, very big foreign money has come in, and it's great. We all want our cities to grow and expand, and it's great that we're international. The globe is more international, as it were, than it's ever been. But what it's meant is that the city, a large part of the city, has just become a city for rich people. I lived in West London where this happened. And I felt very discontent that I didn't have any kind of community around me. I was living very close to the West End. It was incredibly convenient, could walk everywhere. I was right near Hyde Park, which was a very beautiful park to go into. But I didn't feel there was any community. So I moved back to East London, where I'd lived many, many years previously, and then spent a lot of years in East London in more than one address. And I moved back there and I couldn't be happier, because it's a real community. It's old London and new London. It's traditional London and it's changing London, and it seems to encompass both. And I suppose that's one of the great difficulties we face in these cities, is how do we allow the cities to grow, make them modern, not hold them back, but how can we make them for everyone and not just exclusively for the very rich?
Is there anything in particular about Keith Bunin's writing that you respond to?
He's an extraordinary writer, because he can construct some of the longest sentences you'll ever read, except for possibly in prose. But it's sentences to be spoken aloud in the theatre that are so long. That is unusual for a young and a modern writer. I don't know his other plays. I only know this one, and that was good enough for me because I loved it so much. He's wonderful to work with because he's so collaborative. And he's incredibly smart. His brain works at a very rapid pace. I often say to him, slow down, Keith, because the words are coming out too fast for me to compute them. And he's great. He gets it. He gets everything, which is a terrific. I've got two really smart actors and a really smart writer. So it's a challenge for me, because I've got to stay on my toes and, see if I can keep ahead of them. And it's hard. But I mean, he writes exquisitely. His writing is very, very literary, and this play is really a conversation. So it's been an incredible challenge for the actors to make those very exquisite words their own and claim them as characters, and for us to present a conversation, a 90-minute conversation that is passionate and theatrical and doesn't just seem like it could be done in another medium like the radio, for instance. And I think it very much is a stage play and it is a theatrical play, but it's subtle and it's nuanced and it's very, very fine. And so it's made big demands of us to respect and honour the play, but also to feel, can we get it across to an audience? And we're going to start finding out tomorrow night, of course.
You, in addition to being a director, are an actor and a writer yourself. Do you think that cumulative experience helps?
Only helped. Enriched everything for me. I mean, I haven't acted for many years now, but I still have an extrovert personality, and I like sort of taking on characters, I have alter egos and things, so there's still obviously a very frustrated actor inside there. But I relate, I understand how the type of actor that I really admire, I understand how they build a performance. And I think I have the tools from my previous experience of acting, or my intuition as an actor, to help them to build that. And then equally with a writer, I can respect a writer because I know just how very difficult it is. It's the loneliest profession, and it's a struggle. You have to give birth totally alone. And that's what's wonderful about playwriting, is that once you've managed to get to the play onto the page, you can then collaborate with other people. I mean, if you're writing a novel, you're alone, apart from, unless you've got a very good relationship with an editor, you're alone every step of the way, and you know it's tough. So you have to respect what other people do, and not just in a lofty way, but in a real way. I mean, if by being an actor and being a writer, I'm it's grassroots stuff. I know what to do. I've done it. I've done the grind of both. I know the nuts and bolts, and that's only helped. It's been wonderful.
What do you like in particular, if anything, about working on a new play with the playwright there? Because of course you've directed, you know, shows that are established, but this one is new.
Yes, it's quite a different thing. You can sometimes often be very, very relieved that the writer's living on another planet, gone to the stars. You think, well, they won't be coming in to bug me today. You know, you can have that. You can also be very frustrated because you think, I can puzzle over this, and it's too oblique. I wonder what, if I could just ask Harold Pinter what he meant, you know, what would he say? And his answer might, because he is Harold Pinter, might be extremely oblique anyway.
But I would say so.
you'd at least get the chance. So, you know, on the whole, I suppose the biggest thrill of working on new work and having the writer there, if the writer's as collaborative as somebody like Keith is, and on the whole, my experiences of working with new writers has been incredibly positive. The great thing is that you are forging it together. It comes to life through all your different talents, all the different departments together. And it's, you know, we will show a play to an audience that the world has not yet seen. That's like very, very exciting for us. I don't know what the journey of this play will be. You know, it might all finish next week. It might go on to New York. It might go on to London. I don't know. I hope it does go on, obviously. I think it's worthy of it. But it's just very, very exciting to be at the beginning of an unknown journey. We're not sure where it's all heading. You know, when you do a classic play, others have been there and done it before you very successfully. So you've got to live up to that overall standard. And the sad thing is, as wonderfully well as you think you might do it, someone else will come along in a few years' time and they'll do it again. And they might get better reviews than you got. So you can't completely own it. But when you do the first production of a new play, I think you own it. And that's very, very, very thrilling, very beautiful feeling.
You mentioned Pinter and you mentioned, you know, staging classics. You relatively recently did Waiting for Godot and No Man's Land with the same four actors running simultaneously, one night, one the next. I was fortunate enough to see it in New York. It was astounding, astounding work. I did the thing where you saw, I saw Godot as in a matinee and then saw the Pinter No Man's Land in the evening. It was a lot for one day. Right. It was amazing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
So I can't imagine being the person who was at the helm of putting it together, of course, with magnificent collaborators. But how did you all decide to embark on that enormous undertaking?
Well, like most things that happen, it is a sort of organic path. There's a lot of serendipity and quite an amount of amazing good fortune for anything to come to fruition, especially in the theatre. I mean, having big stars and brilliant actors like Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart obviously aids and abets the process greatly. Mm-hmm. But it's still by no means over. It's still a lot of work. But that happened because I had done the Beckett in London with Ian and Patrick, and we'd had great success. And then Patrick decided he wanted to leave. Roger Rees came in and took over Patrick's role. We toured England, we played the West End for two seasons, we went to Australia, we went to New Zealand, we went to South Africa, we even played in a township in South Africa. It had been a very, very extraordinary, thrilling journey, and over 2 to 3 years we'd been doing it. And then Ian and I both said, that's it, we've done it, beautiful, over and out. And Patrick came to me and asked him to direct him in the Pinter play, No Man's Land. And I said, well, I absolutely love No Man's Land. I know it very well. I've tried to do it several times and been thwarted. And when Pinter was alive, he gave me his blessing to do it. But I just haven't been able to put it together. And I said, who do you want to do it with? He said, I want to do it with Ian. I said, well, he won't do it. Ian's turned me down twice on this play. So I said, why don't we do a reading of it? So we did a reading and Ian started to sense what a wonderful role it was, what a wonderful play. And he got a sense of how much fun it could be and how good it would be and still what a challenge. And so I knew that Patrick didn't really want to do the Beckett again. He felt he was kind of been exhausted by it and felt he'd done it. And Ian was still resistant to doing the Pinter. So I suggested to each of them that they did the other play and then the other one would do the other play. So it was a sort of manipulative piece of brokering, if you like.
Uh-huh.
But what was, of course, good about the idea is that they come from the repertory system. They spent a lot of their younger days at the RSC or at the National doing plays in rep. And it's very thrilling for an actor. An actor gets bored with doing the same show 8 times a week. Whereas if you're doing 1-4 and another 4, then the mental stimulation is terrific. It's gargantuan. You just don't get intellectually tired at all. So they were very, very taken by that idea. And then I made the bolder step and said, I think we should all produce it together. We should stay in charge of it and be collaborators and not give it over. And we picked a wonderful partner called Stuart Thompson, who's a very experienced and very well-respected Broadway, been a general manager for many years now, a very big Broadway producer. And he became our partner because we didn't know about the mechanics of doing a Broadway show. I mean, we'd done Broadway shows, but not as producers.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very exciting, thrilling group of people working together for the same ends. And it was one of the joy rides of my life.
And the audience thanks you for it.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you.
The Unbuilt City runs in the Powerhouse Theater. Sean Mathias, it's been an absolute honor. I'm thrilled to have gotten the opportunity to speak with you, and I thank you so much.
Oh, thanks very much. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
The Unbuilt City by Keith Bunin, directed by our guest Sean Mathias, runs at New York Stage and Film and Vassar College's Powerhouse Theater through July 12th. For more information, visit powerhouse.vassar.edu. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.